Good morning on Tuesday, November 6, 2012. You're listening to Brian and Gabe Live. Hello from San Francisco. This is Brian Madden.
And in Omaha, this is Gabe. And man, it's been a long time since we've done a full-on show, right?
Mid-September. It has been, and we'll explain why in a sec, but I also want to introduce here in the studio in San Francisco is Jack Madden. How are you today, Jack?
I'm good. How are you?
Also good. And joining us via Skype from where I assume is somewhere in the greater Boston area is the Tim Mangan. How are you today, Tim?
Good. Thanks, Brian.
And are you in Boston somewhere?
Nearby, yep.
Okay.
So
we were – Gabe, you're right. It has been – it's been a while. A lot has happened since our last show. I mean, I know you and
we
Jack,
switched to Ustream.
We switched to Ustream. Oh, yeah. Let's talk about why that happened.
That happened in the middle of a show.
Yeah, Justin was telling earlier, so the show that you guys did from Barcelona, which I heard the second half of that show, and the second half was amazing.
Because there was no first half.
And Justin was like frantically signing up for new streaming accounts because Amazon fell over, apparently. You guys were in Barcelona. That happened since we were last on. I was everywhere. I got back on Friday from my 32-day trip where I flew literally over 50,000 miles in those 32 days. And so I was not in any state to be doing any kind of shows. And what else we have happen? I guess there was other show. We had VDI shows, consumerization shows. Tim, you were in Barcelona also, were you?
Yeah.
And so
I think that's how we got this show lined up, actually.
Oh, great.
And we were working there, I promise.
And I know, we want to talk about App V5 today, and that's a big sort of agenda item, and certainly why we brought Tim on. But I also want to talk about some of the stuff that's happened over the past, month or so. The main things I want to talk about in the past month are that so Citrix Synergy was in Barcelona, so you three guys were there. I was not. I wonder if you can give me just a quick kind of overview, like what are the big takeaways from Barcelona? And then I want to talk about this Microsoft Surface tablet, because I know Jack put some hands on it and wrote an article that got like 4,000 views in the first day. But I put my hands on it for the first time yesterday, and I have some opinions about this thing. But let's talk about Barcelona. So, okay, if I'm going to walk away, we're sitting at the bar. This is hypothetically speaking. I'm definitely drinking coffee with nothing in it right now. And just update me. I don't even know which of you I'm asking. Barcelona, what's my takeaway?
Excalibur, for one. So the whole unification of Zen Desktop and Zen App technologies, that I guess since they've abandoned those two terms almost officially, not quite officially, the combination of VDI and session hosted technologies is I guess the short definition of Excalibur.
What do you mean they've abandoned? Are they just calling everything Zen Desktop and now it's like Zen Desktop session hosted or Zen Desktop?
No. Zen Desktop isn't there either. When you talk to people about Excalibur, there's no mention of the phrase Zen Desktop or Zen App.
There's no naming there at all.
None whatsoever. Huh. All we have right now is Excalibur, which is release one of Project Avalon, and it is VDI technology or server session hosted technology or something to that effect. I even asked the guy when I got a video demo of it on the show floor, I asked the guy, I said, so you haven't said Zen App or Zen Desktop yet. What's the word there? Are you going away? And he said, to be determined.
Oh, wow.
So I interpret that as yes.
Is there any large retail stores called Excalibur that are going to sue them after they release this? Or Excalibur is officially a code name only?
I'm assuming it's a code name. You haven't heard anything, have you, Tim?
No, that's a code name. There's another code name on the release that follows as well. So.
Okay.
And they talked about that too. That's the next one that's coming up called Merlin, and that's going to be more the advanced stuff that they talked about with Avalon back when they talked about rolling out to the cloud, the orchestration, and all that stuff. They didn't really get into details on Merlin, but that's like phase two of Avalon. So first was getting the technologies unified. The second was getting all the orchestration stuff put together.
Do we have a time frame for that?
Excalibur's out now as a tech preview.
So it was a tech preview.
Yeah. I would imagine.
I don't think they announced dates about releasing.
Yeah, they didn't.
So, and what do these things have? Let me ask you, Tim, because someone asked me this actually, and I know this is not, this is kind of an AppV question. We'll get to the AppV 5 stuff later on. But so Citrix had their ZenApp streaming capability, which I know originally you could use to stream applications to desktop workstations, but more it became sort of a replacement for the installation manager from years past. And the ZenApp streaming was a packaging way to distribute applications to ZenApp servers. Does ZenApp streaming still exist, or does Citrix now just say, hey, if you want to do that, just use AppV in your ZenApp environment?
It still exists. They even recently enhanced it to get the 64-bit support that they were missing for a while. But, you know, Citrix's approach seems to be very open to their customers. Most of their customers are using AppV, even though they can do the streaming from Citrix. And they're very specifically, they're willing to support the customers that are doing that. And you know, once Citrix makes that statement, it's really hard for them to justify putting a lot of money into the streaming piece, but they still seem to be supporting it and continuing to enhance it.
And isn't, because if you have AppV, I mean, because I guess you need, well, how do you get AppV nowadays also? Like, is there, because there was the MDOP in the old days, like an add-on to get that? Does that still exist?
Well, the MDOP is how you get it for the desktop operating system. For the server operating system, it's actually part of your RDS CAL now.
Oh, cool.
So as soon as the user has an RDS CAL, they get the AppV license for the server.
Oh, so that makes, cool. To your point even now, so once Citrix officially, now that Citrix officially supports AppV on ZenApp servers, and it's going to be free with the license they need in order to do this anyway, then that's to your point about, yeah, why they still support. I mean, I guess, you know, good for them. But it seems like if I was a new customer and walk into a new environment, it'd be hard to recommend using ZenApp streaming, I would assume, versus AppV.
Yeah, I would think so.
So before we go down there, let me ask Jack. So I know that Citrix, you, Jack, were following what they were doing at Citrix Synergy Barcelona in the sort of MDM, you know, new age device space. what was going on there?
Well, my takeaway there was they've already released a lot of the new age app management stuff, the MDX stuff, as it's called, that they just announced in May. They released that sometime in September, so that's all out, so that's good. And they had a few other pieces. They did release their own email clients, as we speculated about in May, and then had confirmation in September when that event happened. And they also released their own secured mobile browser that's automatically integrated with all of the MDX stuff, which means that you can plug together all of these you know, different corporate apps. It's really the story of the interconnected web of managed corporate applications on the unmanaged, possibly BYO device. And they did a really good job of telling that story and explaining how everything works in the keynote there. So I was happy to see that they, even though there wasn't that much that was new, they showed the world, like, this is what it is. We get it. This is how it works.
So they have also moved beyond the solution for phones and tablets is VDI.
Yes.
Yeah. So let me
Jack
ask you.
Was positively beaming after the keynote, like, oh, my God, they got it.
Oh, wow.
Exactly.
I think you said you've been trying now to distill this down into a very brief message for a long time, and you hear other vendors trying to do the same thing, and you're like, somebody finally did that. Like, somebody finally got this down into a 10-minute-long conversation, not an hour-long, you know, weaving presentation.
Yeah, and I'd have to explain this in every single article I wrote, but finally I just wrote the one article that says, this is what this is, so now I can, for half the other articles that I write that refer to this type of world of interconnected mobile apps. Now I have the article to refer to, so, and I'm posting that right now.
Having been doing this now for several years, I can promise you that nobody will link or click on that link and they will still think you're an idiot.
Let me ask you a few specific questions. MDX is a brand from Citrix now.
Correct.
What is that?
It's the mobile.
I mean, like, it's
mobile experience. It's the HDX, the mobile equivalent of HDX.
Oh, okay, right. So it's multi-platform. Like, this is email local on your device. It's data. What do they call it? Data file
syncing.
Yeah.
The VPN,
share file, yeah. VPN. The VPN, the browser that goes through their thing, the email goes through their thing. All that is MDX.
Yes,
and that's right. For iOS and Android.
Correct.
I assume Windows Phone at some point. Do they do this for Windows? Mm. Is there Windows 8, like Windows Tile World?
So that was the other sort of as long as we're talking about Windows 8 release. So the Windows Phone 8 Tile World devices. Have a whole new mobile management structure that's completely different than what was in Windows Mobile 6 versions and Windows Phone 7, which really didn't have much at all. This is a whole big thing to explain the history of Windows various mobile products management, how that worked.
Okay, so do we know moving forward, this MDX stuff will probably probably go to Windows Mobile, Windows Phone, we assume, and BlackBerry.
I think they showed a demo of connecting to a Metro app, I think, and is so they're looking at that, but no, they have nothing yet, and they didn't really announce that they were going that direction. I don't recall, but you have to assume it will.
Okay,
just a small handful of device management vendors have announced support for Windows Phone 8 and their new management APIs. And I haven't heard any of them, and I've talked to some of them recently, and I haven't heard any of them mention application management in this style for Windows Phone 8.
Okay, so MDX is Citrix's, to buy MDX, is Cloud Gateway, like, do you buy Cloud Gateway, and then is MDX a part of Cloud Gateway, or is this a separate license, or what is this thing?
It's all part of Cloud Gateway, and Gabe, I know, has been working on, doing a comparison of how, like, what it takes on the back end when you want to put all the MDX stuff in, or rather,
yeah,
if you want to do Cloud Gateway, what do you have to do?
Right, and by planning on, you mean thinking about doing or planning on doing. So essentially, if you buy Cloud Gateway Enterprise, you get these features. Now you get the background, the clientless VPN, you get the mail and calendar clients, you get basically, I might be missing something, you get everything but share file. You still have to buy into share file. So you have to buy into that service. But if you get Cloud Gateway Enterprise licenses, you get all these other things that we've been talking about. Now, so what Jack's talking about, though, is that I was sitting there, and we probably had this conversation on some sort of video or audio or something like that years ago. But I remember when they started talking about this stuff, and it was the Open Cloud Gateway and things like that. And we're like, oh, my God, come on. You need a NetScaler for this? Like, we're kind of annoyed at the fact that you needed to have another component from Citrix involved to make this work, because VMware sitting there with Horizon and it's a web service. And you don't have to buy any hardware and manage an infrastructure and that kind of a thing. And I was sitting there thinking about this, and I thought, I wonder how this compares to, like, Good, since, that's prevalent in many organizations. I wonder if you're comparing this, at first you want to eye roll and be like, oh, man, I have to buy this other Citrix stuff. But, with Good, there's infrastructure in the back end, too. And so that's what I'm planning on working on, is just to kind of outline what goes into each solution, because I kind of have worked past that whole issue in my head, and I want to at least get it out there in article form. So that's what Jack's talking about there.
All right. So let me ask you also, there's this thing called at work and at home. This is part of this. This is Citrix, like @ work. Is that, that's a sub brand of it? That's a part of MDX, is like the work persona versus home persona?
At work is the brand that encompasses some of these applications. So like the mail app is mail at work, I think. And the browser is web at work. I don't remember exactly.
How do you refer to those on Twitter?
poor
bastard who has the Twitter work account from way back when is.
Yeah. That got pretty confusing.
@.work or something. Yeah. All right.
I addressed those specifically on Twitter that way to see what would happen. Nothing happened. I thought Citrix might have been ahead of it and gone and gotten the work account somehow.
My God, I can't imagine. Twitter.com/work. That's who this poor SOB is.
When you think of Citrix, think of work.
Oh, man, this guy, oh, he's pretty good. He's in San Francisco. So good for you, work.
Sorry for 4,000 followers. Tweet.
Yeah. And this guy's got, twitter.com/home just goes to your own home screen, so that's good. I was like, whoa, they have the same number of followers as me. Oh, that is me.
This guy.
Yeah, I have as many followers as Twitter home. That's right.
Looking for what the actual names of these apps are.
All right, so we've got, okay, so that's that. That's about it from Synergy then, right? That's
what Brian, you know, one thing I wanted to talk about on that was that, you know, what Citrix was trying to do is with particularly those application sets, the at work stuff, is along that line of where they're trying to say, hey, you need to separate out your, you know, your home and your work life, and this would be for the stuff that's your work stuff only. And, you know, for a lot of people that works, but, you know, when I think about people like myself and you know, probably a lot of the people that are listening on the call here, we don't have that great a separation. I mean, I really can't separate out the people I deal with through, you know, email and contacts between work and personal, because it's largely a mixture between the two.
Are you segueing because you are now officially a family business? So Tim, Tim works. Tim's your wife Mary Jane, who a lot of people know from Briform, and your son Patrick, who was at Briform last year. These are your official coworkers now, right?
Yeah, and my daughter Kate, she graduated this summer and has joined us as well.
Oh my gosh! So like, are there any Mangans?
Like four times our size.
are there any Mangans out there who are not part of the family business now?
No,
not in the immediate family. Yeah. Oh, that's great! Wow, cool! Congrats. So, and it's nice because
that's pretty cool. Look at you! You've built this up over years. Yes. So that's awesome.
Yeah. Well, the biggest problem is now I have to work. I mean, you know, I set this up so that I you know, my work is really part time, and I spend, you know, I play golf 3 times a week, and, you know, during the week and stuff. And now, you know, I got to like manage them. I got to manage customers and grow up business. I mean, this is like real work now.
And you can't.
You have employees. What the hell do you have to work for?
But
I gotcha.
Now you can't also be in the basement and just say like, leave me alone, I'm working. And they're gonna say, oh yeah, on what?
Yeah.
So is the are they golfers also, or is that your sort of?
No, that's just me. That's where I get away.
Okay, good. Yeah, good. Yeah. Well, let's talk about more of what you've got going on in your world, because you have been. I think most of the people, you know, on this call know who you are. You are one of the three people, I think, now on the planet who've spoken at every single Bri Forum. We gave you your bobblehead for speaking at 10 Bri Forums, which, according to your Twitter picture, it looks like your bobblehead is not entirely accurate anymore. Is that correct?
That's correct. The beard is gone, so it doesn't look like me.
Did people see you at Synergy and just start crying?
Because Sean Bass was a little freaked out.
Yeah. And I just
it was weird. It was like Alex Trebek. Like, if you haven't watched Jeopardy in 13 years and you turn it on, you're like, who the hell is this guy? And that's what it was like seeing Tim. You're like, wait a minute, this guy looks familiar. I actually sat next to you in the Geek Speak Tonight thing and didn't know I was sitting next to you until an hour and a half.
Until I talked.
Yeah, and you were wearing one of those silly hats too, so that helped. But
oh, the Michigan hat? Yeah.
No, that was a Laura hat.
Oh. Yeah. So I got the bobblehead here that I'm looking at. We'll shoot a photo of this later. So Jack and I have the bobblehead, like, you know, sitting out here that we're looking at, and the bobblehead has a beard. So I'm still within my comfort zone currently.
just nudge him and make his head move.
Yeah, and I got to say that your bobblehead Tim agrees with everything I say.
Well, you know, it's great because, you know, you sent me the set of them and we put them on the table. We shake the table and half of them say yes and half of them say no, and it works out well. So, I can answer any question.
So I guess this is something that the family loves also, right? Is that, you know, if they ask you a question that they don't like the answer of, then they can ask bobblehead Tim. and you know, get the different answer.
Works for my daughter every time.
So Tim, so your background, I mean, you've always been, well, I know going way, way back, your background in our industry is around app virtualization, and you were, you know, at Software City in the earlier days, and then you've been doing consulting around app virtualization for a long, long time. And you are an MVP for Microsoft AppV, I believe. I think that's, yeah. And so I know, and you've written lots of tools over the years, and you've written some books. We'll talk about those. And you've got some upcoming books and stuff. But I want to find out what is – so AppV first, like, but the big sort of purpose, I guess, right now, I want to talk about AppV 5 because that just came out, right? AppV
right.
version 5.
That's last week.
Yeah. Okay. Let's say that you are a blogger who's been blogging for, you know, almost 10 years and is not maybe as close to hands-on technology as you once were. What's the world of app, like, what's the world of AppV look like nowadays? I mean, what have I missed in the past, you know, 5 years or so of not being super hands-on? Like, what's AppV look like now? And then, you know, as we bring AppV 5 into the world, what are people excited about for that?
Yeah, I don't know that you've missed a whole lot. You know, quite frankly, the app virtualization world hasn't really changed a whole lot, as much as the apps that we're dealing with have been changing. And I think that's part of what Microsoft has realized in the work that they're doing with AppV 5.0 is that some of the challenges that we were solving when we first put this platform together a dozen years ago, you know, those aren't the important problems anymore. We were dealing with, you know, DLL hell and application conflict, which was just rampant with the applications we were dealing with in those days. And the apps today have gotten better. So those problems aren't the primary ones. So it's been really more, you know, what I've been doing in the last 2 years, I mean, my business has been swamped with people as they go from XP to Windows 7 that if they hadn't been doing
Hang on, we're losing Tim.
Portfolios.
Oh, wait, say the last sentence again. You were gone for a second.
Oh, sorry. not sure which sentence, but let's go back to the folks, you know, moving from Windows XP to Windows 7.
Yeah.
They're trying to get their application portfolios in order. You know, they haven't dealt with a lot of those applications in a long time, and they don't even necessarily know how to get them properly installed and configured on the devices. So they're having to address each of these applications and go back and do that. They weren't documenting stuff in the past well. So they're moving to application virtualization as a way to get those apps in order so that whatever they do in the next migration, you know, whether it's VDI or moving them up to the cloud or whatever, you know, or a new operating system, those apps are going to be in better shape so that it'll be much less work the next time they do a migration. So that kept us really busy this last couple of years.
And is AppV, I mean, I remember 5 years ago, we sort of had this idea that, oh, it'd be cool if AppV became – the AppV package became like the new MSI, you know, where this was the new way. Oh, the days of installing applications are going to go away. Every application is going to be an AppV package. You just run it and, you know, in the future, like Office will be this way and we can stream it from the cloud and all that kind of stuff. Has any of that stuff come true? Do we want that to come true or are we moving in a different direction?
I'd love to see it come true. I mean, that was our dream originally. It still hasn't come true. There is no incentive for the ISVs to, you know, produce packages in this other format. Now, one of the interesting things is with the AppV 5.0 now, the new AppV format that they're using is actually an extension on top of the AppX format that Windows is using for the Windows 8 applications. So there's actually getting to be a little bit of a closer relationship there, which I think might make it easier for vendors to start embracing the application virtualization as part of their product releases. I know Microsoft has some interest in making that happen, but there really needs to be an incentive on the part of the ISVs, and I'm not sure it's quite there yet. Although I think given the penetration that Microsoft is getting, there should be more interest on their part.
So you mentioned the FX thing. I actually thought, and this is my naivety, I think, but the FX was more like a Metro application, because I've always heard that referred to as a Windows 8 application, and they renamed Metro to the Windows 8 interface, and so there's some, you know, naming confusion there. But so are FX applications in Windows 8, do those work in desktop land as well?
No, they don't.
Okay, so this is an extension of a new type of application.
Right. And,
okay.
And what it's really doing is the AppX, you know, format is really a way to put a lot of metadata with the pieces to describe how this app is supposed to work.
Okay, and, so it's not necessarily it doesn't specify a runtime. It's just a container that contains whatever the application is, wherever
exactly.
It should go.
Okay. Exactly. And so what Microsoft did in App V5 is they took that same specification for the metadata and then extended it for the extra pieces you need for application virtualization and put that together. And that's really what the new App V format is with their 5.0 product.
Gotcha.
Yeah, and I know there was some confusion out there by people that were saying, oh, wait a minute, App X is App V as we were going through the beta phases with Windows 8. And, you know, that generated a lot of confusion because people were thinking, oh, well, they're actually virtualizing all of those things. And they're not. All of those Windows 8 apps, quite frankly, they're very simple-minded applications. You don't need app virtualization for them because the main reason for AppVert right now is to manage the interaction between the application and either the operating system or other applications. And those applications don't integrate with other applications on your Windows 8 box. They don't integrate with the operating system except for some very narrow slices to get at the stuff that's in the cloud. And that's pretty much it. So today, you don't need AppVert there. And the good news
I wonder if there's a management aspect for this in the future, though.
Oh, yeah. And those apps are going to get more complicated. I mean, you know, what we're seeing in those Windows 8 apps now are just so simple-minded that we're going to need more complex applications that work with each other and integrate. And then that need will come in.
But maybe those will stay in desktop mode forever. And then they'll, yeah, I don't know. That's getting a whole different topic. But but the point, I guess, though, the takeaway here is that the Windows 8 mode, which, by the way, Jack used the term tile world to describe that mode. And I want to, one of my new missions in my professional life now is to get that phrase tile world into mass circulation. It actually came from David Pogue in the New York Times, and he was talking about, he was doing his official Windows 8 review, and of course we all called this Metro, and I mean everyone knows now that Microsoft didn't have the trademark rights to the term Metro, and so Microsoft now just calls that Windows 8, the Windows 8 interface. But it's funny because so there's a Windows 8 interface and the desktop interface. Then they also make a big deal to say that Windows RT is not Windows 8, but there are Windows 8 applications on Windows RT, which means there's Windows 8 interface applications, but it's not the same binaries that go on Windows RT. And it's just all, you know, confusing as all hell. And so David Pogue said, like, F this, I'm calling that Tile World. Capital T, capital W.
Does that mean people that use that stuff are called tile heads?
they're not worldly. So no, I don't know. So I like that. Yeah, tile heads, tile world. And so so I like this, by the way. So in because tile world applies to both Windows RT and to Windows 8 on Intel architecture. And so I like the idea of that tile world phrase. But the point, though, is I think you're making it. So even though the package format for App V5 and Tile World apps is the same like package. The Tile World itself, because the APIs are so limiting as to what Microsoft allows those applications to do, they are simpleton type applications. And so right now is, I think to your point, Tim, they just flat out don't need, like App V is more a tool to, you know, fix all these massively, you know, complex broken installation applications, and you don't have that in Tile World because it's not allowed.
Right. And we can virtualize those Tile apps. You know, that is something we can do. I just don't see the need quite yet.
What's the what? You can virtualize the Tile World apps?
Yeah. We can run them through App V and deliver them that way.
Is there an App V? Is there an App V agent that runs in the Tile World side of things, or it's more like you can use App V as a delivery mechanism to get the packages onto a machine?
The agent runs in the desktop world, but as part of what it does is it has the ability to put the tiles up there. So if they're tile apps, they just run in their tile mode, but it's virtualized.
But they came there. Oh, wow. I guess that's true because, like, okay. So, hey, one of the people, one of the commenters asked, what about Click2Run? The Click2Run applications that Microsoft is putting up there, are those? Is that truly an App V standalone?
I've yet to hear anyone from Microsoft admit it, but yeah, they are.
That's awesome. I haven't had anyone from Microsoft say this is the case, but the answer is yes. Next question. yeah, let's see. Tile World apps, Tile apps. Ah, yeah, right. We got Tile apps and Tile World. I like it. Okay, so App V5. I mean, so we talked about the new package. I mean, if I'm sort of an App V. Well, I don't even want to say that because if I'm an App V gearhead, I probably already know the answer to this. Like, if I'm an IT manager, if I'm me, if I'm Brian Madden, why do I give a shit about App V5?
App V5 really kind of ups the game and it modernizes the whole platform. If you were someone that wasn't using App V, it removes a number of the stupid little impediments that were in the way of people wanting to go there, things like having to have this special drive letter and stuff like that, that is really historical at this point. But primarily, it's going to open up the number of applications that we can effectively virtualize. You know, I mean, everybody can do a certain percentage of their apps. That percentage is going to be greater with the changes that they've made. They've really tried to address a lot of the areas that were black holes in the product, and the whole product is much more transparent, and you can more freely associate the virtualized application with the rest of the world. You know, what we did originally was over-isolate in order to get these applications to work together, to work independently from each other and not interfere with each other. Since the applications have gotten better, we now have the ability to loosen up that isolation a little bit, which takes care of the problems that we've been running into in the last few years with more modern applications wanting to work together and the isolation just kind of getting in the way.
And I imagine this loosening up the isolation, does that increase the sort of general level of compatibility you have with applications that are out there, or is it just more about app-to-app communication?
It's more the app-to-app stuff. So, you know, I mean, the first app that everybody who starts looking at App V wants to virtualize is Office. And Office has been the worst app for you to virtualize because, quite frankly, it's a platform for every other application on your desk that wants to integrate with it. And app virtualization would get in the way. So, you know, even though we can do Office through App V, you know, most of the MVPs that are out there, you know, we're recommending to the customers, put Office on your base image that you deploy out there and just virtualize the rest of those apps. Yeah.
Is that Tim Mangan's recommendation? Is that Tim Mangan's recommendation?
That certainly has been my recommendation consistently, yes.
But Tim Mangan here in the office is agreeing violently with that.
I've got two.
I'm not
Tim
sure
Mangan
if that's going to be the case with 2013 and 5.0. I mean, you know, the proof will be in the pudding as we. It's going to take about 6 months of real-world experience with lots of different apps and trying to integrate to figure out whether it makes sense. But they came close with the 2010 work that they did, and I think with 2013, I think they got a very good chance of being there.
Oh, that's interesting. So it's not – right, because you say it's going to take 6 months, and I'm like, well, you can't figure that out now. But it's not about whether Office, you know, 2013 is virtualizable. It's more of all the other crazy – apps that are out there, they can hook into it. Yeah.
Yeah. Our past experience has been we'd see a customer go and virtualize Office and, you know, they do the six or seven apps that they know that they got to get working with Office and they'd be happy with it and they'd go out. And over the next 6 months, they'd find app after app. Oh, this works with Office too. Oh, and I have a problem. They have to go patch something. And after about 6 months, they'd hit one that they couldn't figure out how to patch. And then they'd go back and they'd say, okay, Office now goes on the native image. Let's pull that out.
Does one of my biggest arguments against image sharing with VDI, and hang with me because this is relevant. You know, there's this idea that we're going to be able to save on management if we There's easier ways to manage desktops. Let's start getting into image sharing and just virtualize and stream all of our applications down. And I've always said, like, well, yeah, that's good as long as all your applications are virtualizable. But there always seems to be, like, applications you just could not virtualize with AppV. And then, like, what do you do with those? Do you install those on your base image? Do you put them on a terminal server? Do you do what? And do you find – is this still the case, like, where there's – like people who are using AppV, are there people who are trying to use AppV for everything? Do they typically only use it for the problem apps? Do you run into applications that you just cannot virtualize with AppV no matter what?
There are some apps you can't do with AppV, period. I mean, you know, if you got a device driver, you know, we can't virtualize kernel mode components. But in the past, we saw a lot of customers that tried to virtualize everything possible and have very little on the image. And, you know, you get a set of apps that are really easy. They just work. You know, you get a set of apps you have to do a little bit of work for. And then you get a few that you really have to work hard to get them to virtualize. But it was worth it to them to get that the list of apps that have to go on the native image down as small as possible. And there's some people that have done some fantastic work in that regard. More recently, though, we see so many enterprises that now have a solution like SCCM in place that makes it easier to deliver the native image or, you know, those extra pieces on top of it, that they don't have to go through that work. They do the stuff that makes sense in AppV, and they let the rest of the stuff go as native applications.
Okay, so because they already have a way, like the native applications, then they can do the more classic, like just MSI, you know, installs, transforms, that kind of stuff. So virtualize what's easy.
Yeah, all of that stuff.
So at that point, one of the arguments I've heard when people talk about that is, well, so if you're only using AppV to virtualize the apps that are easy to virtualize, aren't those the apps that probably didn't cause you problems anyway? So, like, are you really saving anything?
Not really. If you look at the amount of effort it takes, because you're not just going to take that app and just push it straight out. What the enterprise does is they'll take it into something like Admin Studio and repackage it. You take a look at the amount of work it takes to repackage an MSI, that's a much more complicated and expensive effort than it is to run it through the AppV sequencer.
And I guess also then, once you go through the AppV sequencing process, now you have that package, which is kind of good everywhere, right? So you've got, I mean, so maybe that application is simple, but you never know. It's like, you know, the lipstick and the toothpaste. Was that in Batman? You know, it goes like Michael Keaton Batman, I mean.
They have a complicated one of the advantages is you package it once for whatever operating systems you have to put it to. So if you've got mixtures on the desktop, if you also going to put it out to a terminal server, you know, it's the same package. So you just go through that effort once.
Update me. A lot of people also ask, like, can I use AppV to run like 32-bit apps and x64 apps and 32-bit, does it have to stay in the same platform? Can I use AppV to fix compatibility so I can use XP apps on Windows 7? Does it do any of that kind of stuff?
Some of that stuff. So you can do the 32-bit apps. You can package it once and run it on both the 32 or the x64 platform for, you know, 99.9% of the apps. The only ones you can't do are the ones that have a different installer for 64-bit, right?
Oh, so they're really sort of packaging. It's like almost side-by-side packages.
What it does is it puts it in the format that when it gets to the client says, oh, hey, this is a 32-bit. I'll put it in the side-by-side so it'll look more like program files x86, even though you put it in the program files kind of thing.
What? How about their 16-bit components?
You can't go the other way. 64-bit executables will never run on a 32-bit platform.
How about if you have 16-bit? How about if you have 32-bit apps with 16-bit components that will run on 32-bit but will not run on 64-bit?
Can't do that one, although I have seen somebody sequence DOSBox.
Yeah.
Okay, and run the 16-bit app in DOSBox as a virtual application on the 64-bit machine.
Okay, that's badass. Because I always thought, like, yeah, you couldn't virtualize NTVDM and then put that in your package.
And I have to give a shout out to Nikki Callen for coming up with that idea.
Oh, that's awesome. How about, like, ARM? I guess there's no AppV agent for ARM.
There's no AppV agent for ARM. And the other part of your question was OS compatibility.
Oh, yeah.
So if the app doesn't work on Windows 7 natively, it probably isn't going to work with AppV. Now, I mean, you still have the app compat toolkit you can play with to do some of that stuff as well. But yeah, it does not solve OS compatibility issues.
Okay, so in the chat room, some guy says or gal, someone says, I'm running XP sequenced apps with no changes on Windows 8 x64, but that just means that this person, the XP, I'm guessing even maybe 32-bit apps, those apps themselves would have run natively or would have run without AppV on Windows 8 x64. So that's why those packages just work.
Although quite possibly they wouldn't have installed.
Oh, right. Yeah, yeah. So that could actually be
a sometimes we run into that, and that's one of the benefits that's in there.
Ooh, now, like the 16-bit installer problem too, yeah.
By the way, since he mentioned that, I should mention Windows 8 and Server 2012. So we've had AppV 4.6 SP1, which has been out now for about a year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
There is also a release that came out last week called 4.6 SP2, and that specifically now supports the Windows 8 and 2012 platform. Okay, they also came out with AppV 5.0 at this very same day, which is the whole new format thing that Microsoft is doing to go to the future. But an important thing to notice here is they also did a compatibility mode. So because this is a new format, to get all of your apps over to AppV 5.0, you'd have to go through a conversion process. Now, they made some PowerShell scripts and stuff to make that easy for you, but it's still going to be work. You have the ability to put 4.6 SP2 on that Windows 8 machine and continue to run all of your old packages and just start putting out the new stuff in the 5.0 format. So you can kind of migrate over and have both.
Oh, they'll run side by side.
Run side by side that way. I don't know that I want to do that for a long period of time. I have concerns about what happens when I've got, you know, 20 apps in one client and 20 in the other, and they suddenly start wanting to talk to each other. I have to be really careful about that. But it will help some people if they've just got one app they got to get out, and it won't work on 4.6, but it will work on 5.0. Fine, drop the 5.0 client on there, and just do that one app in that mode.
Does AppV have a thing where, like, if I have an AppV package that was sequenced, you know, 5 years ago, can I always sort of break into the source, let's say, of that package, or is it possible that the package has been like sort of compiled and then the person who wrote it is no longer with the company and it's like, we have this 4.6 package, we can't touch it because we're afraid of it and there's no way to migrate it, so we put 4.6 on?
You've always been able to do that. AppV 5.0 is a complete format change, and this is the first time, you know, ever that this has happened. So the 5.0 tools can't touch the old 4.6 packages except to do a conversion. But yeah, you can always go back to those old packages and open them back up and refresh them if you need to or touch them up.
How do you feel about the conversion itself? Is that a process that does that always work, or do you have to evaluate?
No, it does not always work. There is a test command that will tell you if it's likely to work. And if it doesn't pass the test, don't even think about doing it. Yeah. But even if it passes the test, I'm not excessively comfortable about those packages. And I mean, unless you have thousands of apps that you just need to kind of run them all through, I'd be more comfortable in just resequencing them. I mean, it doesn't take that long, assuming you have a good recipe of, you know, here are the steps that we took to create the initial package. If you wrote that down and documented it the way we've been telling people for the last 7 years.
Tim, come on. Guys, as long as you wrote everything down when you did it 5 years ago, you should be fine.
That's a 72-point bold if.
When I started doing the training 7 years ago, I mean, this was like news to people. The people we've had coming in the last 3 or 4 years, they're like, yeah, we do that all the time now. I think people, IT administrations have gotten much better at doing that.
Wow. Let's pimp your training real quick, by the way, because you do have – it's an independent training class. It's a class that you developed or co-developed, I think, right?
And yeah,
you
co-developed along with Kevin Kaminsky.
Yeah. And so you teach this. It's like you tell me it's a five-day class. I show up. You do it in
five-day class. We call it our master's levels class. We take them through everything from soup to nuts. Even if they know nothing about AppV, they will be experts by the time they finish. We usually get about 50% of the people that are in that state and 50% that have been working with it with a few years. And I think they all go away extremely happy with the training we do, because it's not just textbook training. We have them do unscripted applications where we just say, hey, bring in a few of your hard apps. And, once we get you through the basics and understand the technique you're supposed to use, we'll have you go through and try them and have problems. And we'll help you work through and understand the techniques to work through the problems.
Oh, and you can do
how
that.
How many days is this class?
It's a 5-day class.
And you can do it in the class, like literally bring your own app into class with you. And then everyone can be packaging their own apps and you can kind of bounce
Thursday
around
afternoon.
And help them. Yeah. And then it's like, oh, hey, everyone, look at workstation number 5. Here's the problem. So let's all look at this together and off we go.
Yeah, that's what we do. I mean, I limit the class to only 10 people because it would become unmanageable beyond that. But yeah, that's what we do.
So let me ask you a few questions. Okay, ChangeBase and AppDNA. Quest recently bought ChangeBase, which Dell recently bought Quest. So ChangeBase is up inside inside Dell somewhere. Citrix bought AppDNA. My understanding of these two products is they're similar to each other, and both of these products look at your existing applications that you have to install, and they help you figure out whether you can virtualize them and maybe even create those virtualization packages. So I guess First of all, that's what these things do, right? ChangeBase and AppDNA?
Yep.
Do you like these things?
I like those things. There's a third one that's called AOK. I know Flexera uses that as part of their product suite as well. I think the tools are great in what they can do. They're not as effective as the marketing spin makes it sound. They can investigate and take a look at the MSI and open up the tables and find an awful lot of issues that are in there and just in a little few clicks of the button be able to tell you, hey, this is probably going to work fine for what you want to do, or this is going to have this particular type of problem. And they're able to dig out extremely good detail, which is what I really like about the products. I just think they're very expensive. And you need to be going through a big migration to make it worthwhile to pay those costs.
I wonder if that's – I guess I don't even know how they work anymore. If there's, I just assume that's like part of Zen Desktop now, but I guess not.
No, that's a special piece in the case of Citrix. And you pretty much – they've got a few new pricing models they talked about in Barcelona. But pretty much you're probably going to pay on a per-app basis. So you can buy the ability to do a certain number of apps and then run them through. And at least they're smart enough to realize if you do the same app again, it's the same app, or a different version of the same app, they'll say, okay, that's still the same app. So you don't have to get another license.
You don't get dingbot for Acrobat 9.12 and 9.14. Then.
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying? Yeah.
That's what I hear.
Tim, are you focused primarily on AppV, or do you know? I mean, do you dig into semantics, workspace virtualization, and like ThinApp and that kind of stuff?
Semantics still selling that?
Oh, ouch! Randy, we're helping. We're trying, man. Hang in there, buddy.
I don't get into the other ones very much. I mean, I play around with them a little bit. I think they all have good technology in them. I mean, I like a lot of what Semantic was doing in the way they did the isolation.
Yeah.
I'm just not sure what they're doing with the product, quite frankly. ThinApp, it's a good solution. If you're a VMware shop, it's a good solution to go with the piece that you have right there. I'm a little biased. I think AppV is the best of those solutions to get a larger percentage of applications virtualized, but whatever gets the job done, right?
So by the way, because I was thinking with VMware, so if you're using ThinApp with terminal servers, well, you already have an AppV license, and then so there still is MDAP. Like if you buy SA, I don't even know if you would know this. If you buy SA now, does that include MDAP, or MDAP is an add-on?
No, MDAP is an add-on, but it. Last I heard, I mean, street price was like $8, and typically an enterprise, when they do the SA, they'll negotiate the MDOP, and they'll get a great deal as part of that. Microsoft tends to discount that quite a bit.
Okay, so for all intents and purposes, AppV is close to free, or as close to free as you're going to get, I guess.
It's getting, yeah.
Yeah. What about, okay, so you mentioned Admin Studio. And I want to ask you about that. This is so the company is called Flexera, and they were, I think this is the people that have Install Shield, right? Like they ended up somehow with Install Shield.
Yeah, they're Install Shield people.
Yeah,
right. And at one point, they were called Acresso for a while. I mean, they've had a bunch of names.
Yeah, and Install Shield was like part of some other, I think, bought and sold or something. I don't even know, but so they have this Admin Studio thing, which is like Install Shield. Okay, so let me ask you this: if I have it right, like my understanding, Install Shield. If I'm an app developer, Install Shield is like what I use to build my installer, like one of the options I have to build my installer. Admin Studio is like the Install Shield for IT professionals. So if it's my job to deliver applications out to my world of users, I can use Admin Studio to help me collect all these installer routines and packages from all my different billion applications and build the packages that I deliver to my users.
Yeah. So you would take that. You'd be customizing those things. You'd be doing things like, you know, an app has certain prerequisites, like, you know, you need the 2010 version of Visual C, you know, runtime for this particular application. And rather than have the installer go out and try to install that on the machine with the application, they take it and they break those pieces out and they produce a customized version of the installer that just has the app, and they manage the dependencies separately. And that's what a lot of the companies are doing. And, you know, they'll get the app customized just the way they want it.
And so, but Admin Studio fundamentally is building installers that are installing the applications, for lack of a better word, in the traditional way. So I would use, I mean, does Admin Studio work with anything from AppV, or is it sort of like an either or?
They have a separate module that you can buy that does a conversion to application virtualization. So, you know, you kind of bring it into your Admin Studio environment, you massage the stuff, and that is an output format. They can output to AppV, SFT format. They can output to the Citrix streaming format, and they can output to the ThinApp format. I think it's those three.
Is it still called SFT format for AppV5, or would we call that like AppX format now?
It's actually called AppV format for AppV5.
Okay.
And the last I checked, again, the product just got released last week.
Right.
I haven't seen anything from Flexera supporting AppV5 yet.
Right, but give it a week.
Give it time.
So so that's stuff is good, like stuff. I guess if people like when these enterprises are using AppV and deploying tons of applications, do they always have something like Flexera, or is Flexera, I don't know if there's other companies that do that kind of thing, or if it's just some companies just still.
Well, Wise was the big company, bigger than
WISE, right? Not Wise Thin Clients, but like Wise Software.
The other one, yeah. And Symantec bought them and has pretty much abandoned that product. Flexera is almost the only game in town right now, as far as I can tell.
What the hell is going on in Linden? We got to get back. All right, this is a different conversation. Symantec, you make me angry. Sorry, go on. Flexera is it. What did I want to ask you? I just deleted my question and forgot. You've got a book. You're writing a book with your daughter.
Yeah.
On AppV. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
What's
yeah.
that about?
So, you know, with AppV 5.0 coming out, one of the things that happens is that pretty much anything you want to do, you're going to have to learn some PowerShell if you're an IT admin. And if you haven't done PowerShell, that can be a little bit of a jump. So we're kind of taking the AppV PowerShell stuff and sort of trying to fully document that stuff, particularly a lot of the behind-the-scenes objects that are in there to work with to make the interface really useful. So that's the book we're writing, and it should be done in about a month.
There's not. I don't know how many father-daughter IT books have been written.
maybe the first.
It was funny because, you know, she started working for me, and one of the things I said, well, can you go look at this? And now, I mean, you know, she's, you know, 24. Typical just out of college and has been, you know, using Linux and stuff like this and you know, Microsoft.
Yes, that is typical for 24-year-old females just out of college today. You're correct. That is typical. Go on.
I had her take a look at the PowerShell interface for some purpose, and she came back and she's like, wow, this is great. I didn't know Windows could do this. PowerShell's been there for a while. I never saw it before. So,
weren't you paying attention when you were 10?
We jumped on it and said, okay, you're going to help me write the book.
Wow. I don't even... Well, that's amazing. Let's get you both on when that book is done, because this will be a fun conversation. And you've got your other book also, the caching performance book, which was, I think, based on, well, I don't want to say based on a session, but you gave a session at Briform like 2 years ago on like...
No, it was just this last year.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah.
they all blend together.
That was in London. Yeah.
That was like
every
6 months ago? Oh, wow.
Yeah, every year I go through and try to come up with, you know, something new to do for Briform. I usually do a lot of research on it. And so I started that project a year ago in August and said, you know, I want to do something in the performance area around caching. And as I got into it, I realized there was a lot of neat stuff that could be done and decided to write a book as part of it. And so then we did the presentation out at the London Briform when the book wasn't quite ready yet. And I released the book just before the Chicago Briform. You know, there's some neat stuff in there about, you know, how Windows does caching, a lot of the technologies that are in there, like, you know, how ReadyBoot works and SuperFetch and the app prefetch stuff. And a lot of that stuff comes into play, particularly as people try to optimize the systems for, like, you know, VDI environments where you want the operating system to boot up and, you know, act as efficiently as possible and try to reduce some of the IOPS that are happening. So there's a lot of good information in there. And I also, as part of it, ended up having to write a whole bunch of new tools.
Of course you did.
Of course I did.
Yeah, why not?
which are available up on my website to take a look at the stuff. Like, I found there was absolutely nothing out there that would tell you what SuperFetch has in its scenario database files. So, you know, it creates these things that says, oh, these are the things that you normally run, that I'm going to preload these files off the disk for you in the memory as soon as you log in. There was no tool out there that would tell you what those things are. So, oh, I wrote one that dug into it and broke out the format and display that stuff. Right. Wow. So those are the kinds of things that I do for fun.
Can you manipulate that with your tool? Because I would imagine that'd be kind of cool if I could, like, the CEO complains about, you know, how slowly his kitten loving application opens, and you can just be like, all right, F that, it's in RAM. The instant you when you start typing your username, it's in RAM now.
No, I didn't do that. That would be a cool idea.
Yeah. And you've got tools, by the way. I mean, as long as I've known you, you've been writing tools and stuff. So I assume you've got a whole bunch of, you know, you've got tools for AppV, little all sorts of stuff, and, yep. And do you update these tools? You've got new stuff, tools around AppV5 now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I got a new tool I just released on AppV5, which is really for someone that once they're done sequencing the application, they want to test the application. It's a quick tool that'll get you in, provide you diagnostics for stuff like RegEdit and, you know, process monitor inside the virtual environment, so you can figure out what's going on when you need to. But yeah, I probably have, like, I don't know, maybe 100 different tools that are up there, and maintain them every once in a while.
So maintain them every once in a while, so they don't crash. Unless their name is called iwillcrash.exe, which I believe that was one of your tools, right?
That is one of my tools, yeah. One of the bad applications from an early Briform.
Yeah, yeah. Because
they came with the warning of, do not click the send this report to Microsoft button that comes up.
Well, you know, the funny thing with that app is at one point I did get a call from a guy at Citrix from the EdgeSight group. That apparently when someone clicked the button in EdgeSight, they got two error reports instead of one, and they wanted to know why. So I sent him the source code.
And it's like, yeah, here we go. But it's funny because it doesn't – like, the guy doesn't put it together also. It's like, wow, there's a lot of apps from this app called iwillcrash.exe. Well, that's weird. Well, you know, at least – so, you know, those who know Tim know that he's Michigan fan. Gabe and I, being from Ohio, are Ohio State fans. And Tim, I thank you for not naming your application something like Ohio's Finest.exe or whatever. It's the one that crashes, you know. There's a lot of fun to be had there.
Tim, your book, I'm holding it in my hands now. It's 226 pages, which sounds, if it were normal book size, like a very short book. But this is like 226 8.5 by 11 sheets of paper.
Yeah.
Front and back.
Crammed
this
in,
is
yeah.
Crazy. Yeah.
I wanted to do it as an ebook, but the problem was that most of the screenshots that I wanted to use were tools like the the process monitor and stuff that Rusinovich does, that, you know, you need a screen that's at least, you know, 1600 pixels wide to fit. and you can't put that on a 600 pixel device.
That's a good point. I had to go to screenshots you have. Yeah, yeah, of that ATM Superfetch app that you wrote. Like, there's no way in hell you'd be able to read this if you put it on a smaller size page.
Yeah, exactly. I really wanted to get rid of the paper, but I couldn't.
So that book, by the way, so I've read this book. Actually, I should write an article about this. Tim, when did I get it? From Gabe or from you? I don't know. I got it at some point and like read it on an airplane on the way home. And just kind of
you must have been bored.
I started paging through it, but it's really fascinating because a lot of this Windows, Windows client performance tuning is not my world anymore. But it was really, it's just kind of interesting. Like I almost read about it like the way you read like Wikipedia and learning how stuff works. It's just kind of interesting to read, to like dig into. And it wasn't word for word, but like I spent a couple hours kind of flipping through and how the stuff kind of actually works and so much stuff that I had no idea. I mean, you read this book and you're like, man, Windows is complex.
Yes, it is.
But more so even, personally, I liked reading that better than I did even the resource kit, which again is not a word for word thing for me, but I mean like flipping through, but it was pretty interesting. And I guess, I don't know, how the book is doing for you. Hopefully that's doing well enough, enough to think about Windows 8 version of that book.
There may be a Windows 8 version, although quite frankly, there's not a lot that changes in the stuff that I cover there in Windows 8. There are a few areas that change out, and I think if I do a Windows 8 version, it will be to look at some of the new things. And in particular, what I would want to look at in something in that type of book is how does this affect when you start using SSD drives? Because a lot of the optimization that Microsoft has in the operating system has an assumption that there's a high latency to the disk, and it needs to solve that problem through caching. And as soon as you start going to SSDs, that becomes less of a problem. So now does it really make sense to be doing those things? And I think Microsoft is getting smarter on that. I haven't so far detected a lot of changes in Windows 8 to optimize for the fact that you have SSDs in there, other than turning off the defragmenter automatically. But I suspect there are some things in there. We just need to find them.
Well, that's interesting because I know that Apple, when they announced the new iMacs, they mentioned that it has support for, I don't want to use the word hybrid drive because there are hybrid drives.
Fusion drive. Right?
Fusion, yeah. So there are hybrid drives that exist that have, a small amount of SSD and mostly magnetic, but they work automatically at the hardware level to move the most accessed stuff into SSD. But with the Mac OS, I think it was built into the most recent, into Mountain Lion, where it actually recognizes these as two separate volumes, but it knows this is SSD, this is magnetic, and then it can move files around with the assumption that the OS can be smarter about what should be put on SSD than perhaps the drive would at that level.
And yeah, so it's local tiered storage.
Yeah, so the question is, does Windows have that capability built into it? And
they have some of the technology. I mean, what the thing, the piece that they call Ready
Boot?
Not Ready Drive, Ready Boot, no, Ready Boot, Ready Boost, which is originally put out as, you've got a Vista laptop, it doesn't have enough memory and doesn't have a very good hard disk, so you could put this little USB memory stick in there, and we'll use that to do some caching. That's the exact same idea, is just the form factor of how did that device show up. Here it showed up through a USB drive. But if you had it on the hard disk, Microsoft could easily be doing that as well, as long as they build the right type of driver for that device to recognize it as two devices now.
For the the hybrid drive, you're right. I guess that would be just simply a driver. It would have to be, if you want to expose that to the OS, you would have to. Right, OS would obviously have to be able to see both of those.
Yeah. I mean, I've got a hybrid drive in one of my machines here, and it acts the way you said initially. It acts as a single device, and the operating system doesn't see it as two devices. I think as those people work with Microsoft to build their drivers for their device for Windows, they would have the capability of actually showing them as two separate devices, and then Windows could take advantage of it.
Hey, how does that hybrid drive work for you? Do you like it?
That's okay.
Brian's in the market.
Yeah. So Gabe.
See, you didn't come and see my new machine in Barcelona. So my new machine is.
I'm sorry. I was in Singapore.
It's dual SSDs with a RAID controller on board on the laptop.
Of course it is.
That thing screams.
Well, so I've got a home computer, and I assume the hard drive failed because it started. It was fine before I left, and I got back after being gone for a month, and it just started it would freeze. Like the keyboard would lock, everything would lock up. I couldn't use any applications. No mouse response. The mouse pointer would move, but nothing else. Hard reset, and I did it like 5 times in one day. And then finally, I hadn't rebuilt it in a while, so finally I decided yesterday I would just rebuild it. So I go through the rebuild process, reboot to the installer, and then the hard drive, it doesn't even see the hard drive. Even the disk, this is a Mac, so in the disk utility, it doesn't even see the raw drive. And it saw it the first time because I went through and erased it and repartitioned just to restart from scratch. And I went through the install, and it got to 100% done and said, please wait while it reboots, and it never rebooted. So I restarted the install, and this time the hard drive was just gone. So I assume that means that the drive is toast. It's a 256 SSD, and it's funny because I will waste money on it's amazing. My house is a museum of stuff I spent too much money on that I didn't need. And, a 256 SSD, I don't know what these probably cost anymore, but they're probably only a few hundred bucks, but I'm angry to have to spend money to replace something that broke. If it's something new that stupidly I don't need, my, new expensive coffee machine that heats the water hotter than Mr. Coffee, I'm all over it. But for this, and so Gabe was suggesting one of these hybrid drives so I could spend less money. I have a giant 2 terabyte external drive for all the real storage, so I don't even need a huge, huge drive on this thing. But I've never used these hybrid drives in real life. So I'm just curious, will I get the SSD performance out of it, or do I need to?
No, yeah, even then,
no, you don't.
I've upgraded from laptop sized 7200 RPM drive to 7200 RPM hybrid drive, and there's not, if there's anything, it's negligible. It's just that it's right there, and I didn't know what you had in there to begin with. So
yeah.
I'm looking on Amazon, 256 gig SSD is $186.
Oh, really? Do you know if those things are heat sensitive? Because I have this computer is actually up in my attic, and it's inside a little box, so to be dust proof. And I've got a furnace filter on the box, so it can breathe. And I put all these things are instrumented with temperature sensors all over. So I got some software that just puts a little temperature thing, and it will spike above 90 or 95 Celsius for short bursts, when I open Chrome, for example. But most times, cruise around 70 Celsius, so I don't feel like that's overheating. But I don't know if SSD is more heat sensitive than magnetic or vice versa. It seems like SSD would be fine, right?
I don't know. Yeah, I would think so. You need a fan in that box. Get a little 5-volt USB powered fan.
Yeah, I thought about that.
My MacBook Air right now is running at 29.7 Celsius, and that's with all these flash things going and chat rooms and Skype and all that. So you're running a little warm.
And I took all the power bricks and stuff out of the box, so all that heat is not there. It is literally a Tupperware box with a hole I cut in the top and a furnace filter I duct taped to it. I should show a picture of this. And you know what's amazing? So I've been working on my apartment for the past 4 years, and I gutted this place and have done work with some designer and builder friends to make this amazing thing. And this desk, we built this desk in the office that floats from the wall. It's seamless. The monitors are flat screens on the wall, but I didn't even do monitor mounts. We built a recess cubby into the wall to suck in the back bit of the monitor. So it looks like the monitors are just on the wall. There's no wires, wireless keyboard, wireless mouse. There's no wires anywhere. The computer goes, the wires go up a pipe inside the partition wall to the attic. And so it's so gorgeous and beautiful work of art on the downstairs. And my upstairs is a Tupperware box, a furnace filter, and some duct tape.
So somebody else did the downstairs and you did the upstairs.
That is suggestive. But true. all right. Well, let's wrap it up, because I actually have a podcast to do now about storage for VDI. So I am speaking at San Francisco's it's a Tech Target show called Storage Decisions. And I have the closing keynote at this show. It's this Thursday, where I get to talk to storage people about what they need to know about VDI. And my main thing is we need single instance block level inline storage because I want it to work with persistent disks. So anyway, what was my point with all that? I'm giving that presentation and I was going somewhere. Well, I don't know.
I think you were heading towards
the
sign off here.
I got a podcast. Yeah. I got a podcast to discuss. Oh, fuck. Our flag just fell down. Damn it. The Ohio State flag just fell off the wall when I was on the phone with Tim Mangan. Tim, I don't know how you
Tim
did that. I'm not happy about this.
It was my bobblehead.
All right, your bobblehead is going back to the wall, and now like you're facing the wall. Your bobblehead.
Tim can come back on the weekend of the week of the game.
Yeah, your bobblehead, Tim, is now in timeout.
1 hour of crappy Michigan jokes.
So,
I had a website that just generated college football jokes at one point in time, and we could dust that off, bring it back for this game. So next week, I'm trying to get to see if we can get like Jerry and Gibson and Dan Brinkman on, because they have some opinions on Citrix licensing, Platinum, all that stuff that seems to be pretty insightful. INCITE on Twitter. So I think I want to try to get those guys on. But we also need to postpone then our Windows 8 WinRT Surface tablet conversation. And perhaps if you and Jack are done with it, if you wouldn't mind in the mail this week so I can get it in the next few days and play with it, maybe then all three of us can have opinions for it next week.
Oh, I'm done with it.
I got to use one a little bit hands-on when I was in Raleigh last week, but it was just like at the Microsoft kiosk in the mall because the Apple store was closed.
Well, I wanted to you know what? All right, we'll save it. I wanted to love this thing so bad. And
maybe you like the Pro, but yeah, save it.
Well, the Pro is a laptop. All right, save it. Okay. Tim?
We can have this conversation if we just say, all right, save it after every sentence.
Save it. All right, Tim. Thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you.
You know, I congrats on bringing the whole family in, and you know, your upcoming book's awesome. We got a link to the site there. We'll put the link in the show notes as we post this. You know, Gabe, thanks. Jack, I know this was not. We didn't talk about anything in your department today.
You got to talk like an hour ago.
Yeah. So, but thanks for hanging. And the more that we talk about, the more that we do these kind of shows, Jack is like, I'm so glad I just focus on mobile devices.
I mean, you to get this kind of show though, you got to be doing this for 15 or 20 years. I mean,
yeah, we all this crap we had about AppV historically is what enables it. Anyway, Radio, Gabe, thanks, Jack, Tim, all y'all
thanks
for
Jim.
Listening. Thanks, Justin, all this work, and we will talk to you all next week.